St. Helens listened hard. The sounds that had been growing nearer were now receding like an outgoing wave.
I wonder. Those boys, they said surrender, and I thought it was because they were losing, but now it sounds as if our side has been driven off. More witchcraft?
Suddenly, his cell door opened, and a big Kelvinian was pushed inside.
More! More crumb!
More rubbed at a spot of blood on his right cheek. He shook his head as though trying to clear it of cobwebs.
Yeah, they got me, big mouth. Me and 100 or so more they stuck in a stockade. God knows how many died.
You're blaming me? You're calling me a big mouth?
That's what you are! You were all for this war. You could hardly wait to get your commission.
More, I never wanted to fight. But there's the prophecy and the king.
The king you knew is not our beloved Rufert. He's a nasty imitation from another world. You knew, and yet you approved everything he wanted.
We were all of us witched or magicked. It's Zoanna, I'm certain.
Zoanna? She's dead.
I wish she were. We all wish. But she must have escaped John's wrath. She must have gotten away and brought back King Rufert's imposter from that frame Kelvin visited. It's the only answer.
St. Helens, what are we going to do?
I fear we are going to lose.
Can we lose? With the prophecy working?
I never believed as completely in that as you pointy ears do. Kelvin isn't in this frame. He might not even be alive.
That would cancel the prophecy, I suppose.
There may be a way.
What way? My men are running as if they'd never stop.
The boy kings. They're sort of friends of mine, maybe. Nice little chaps. They even cleaned this cell. They offered me their two-country surrender.
What?
That's right. Only I'm not sure the witch would let them. Only she's a good witch, not the Zoanna kind.
Witch's tits! You mean actually surrender?
That's what they said. They're afraid for themselves and for Helba, and I think for Helba's cat. They're only kids, younger than Philip.
They're 24. They age 1 year for each of our four. They only look like 6 years old.
So it is said. But they want to surrender. That's the important thing. What should I tell them?
You could tell them, yes. Zoanna and her consort we can get rid of once the fighting's over.
We hope. It was tough going before, wasn't it?
Yes. I'd hate to fight a revolution all over again. And this time without a round ear.
I have round ears.
Yeah, you have. But St. Helens, you're no Kelvin.
It doesn't look like he and his father and his half-brother are coming back. Be nice if they did.
I don't like to say it, but I figure their disappearing and the evil one appearing may not be coincidence.
They sat in gloomy silence for several long moments.
If they're winning, they won't surrender.
Probably not. But they're just kids.
The witch would prevent them.
I don't know. She bosses them and spanks their butts, but maybe they have the governing decisions.
You think?
No. I think they're only kids.
Difficult situation.
Yeah.
All right. If they'll give the surrender, I'll take it. If it's legal, it should end the fighting.
They stood at the edge of the swamp watching the Frugirs come laden with copper stings. The Crumb lookalikes and their brethren watched with disbelief as the pile grew higher and higher before the transporter. Finally, late in the day, it was all there and the second stage of the operation was about to begin.
Will this be enough? Is this enough copper to buy an army sufficient to overthrow your tyrant?
Son, if we lose with this much copper, we deserve it. I didn't know there was so much anywhere. At home, I know there's not. Can we start sending now?
Kelvin nodded. The loafers began working in a way that belied their name. Bundle by bundle, they reduced the pile, tossing each into the transporter. There was a purple flash as the stings traveled alone to their destination. At the other end, the men who had gone back were presumably unloading as fast as the stings arrived. Suddenly, Kelvin had an uncomfortable thought.
Can we be certain that the people who are to get the copper were in fact getting it?
Kelvin, you're worrying again.
I am, Mervania. I can't help myself.
Suppose you go back, and I stay with you as I did before.
If the guardsmen are there, they will kill me or capture me. You wouldn't be able to stop that.
Yes.
Or can you come to the rescue?
No, I'm confined.
I mean, mind-stunning anyone who attacked me, as you did with my father when he...
Not at such distant range, Kelvin. I'm only in contact with you there. It would be like you trying to score on an enemy soldier out of your sight beyond the horizon.
The square ears will help?
They would not interfere with another world's affairs. That might annoy Muvar.
But the copper's an interference.
Not to them. Copper's a mineral. Besides, there's no way they can use this transporter.
Can't use... Oh, I forgot. Wrong ears, right.
Your mental deficiencies never cease to amaze me.
Yeah, really stupid, ain't he?
Then I'm really on my own?
You're the hero, Kelvin.
Kelvin looked at his father and brother and his newfound friends. Was he just scaring himself needlessly? No, the Chimera had as much as assured him that his worries were justified.
I'm going back. If all is not going as it should, I'll return.
And if it is, you'll stay?
Until you join me. The Chimera will warn you if I get there. King's guardsmen are in control and I get caught and can't return.
Why can't we all go, one after the other?
Because one after the other, we could all be killed or captured. The Square Ears can't help, and neither can the Chimera. So I have to find out.
They were still discussing it as Kelvin forced his feet to carry him into the transporter. His heart skipped. Kelvin nodded greetings. Redleaf, Bilger, Hester, and of course Jillip. The boy, unlike the three grown men, was sweatless and resting. Why did they let him get away with such laziness?
King's guardsmen been around?
Uh-uh. Just us and the copper. When the royalists learn what we've got, they'll want it. We may need an army just to get this to where we can buy one.
Bullrood, you said?
Yep.
The journey to Bullrood was surprisingly uneventful. For a full day, Kelvin labored with the belt transporting the copper from atop the cliff to the ground. Getting pack horses for the copper proved to be easy. The loafers knew the farmers they could count on, most of whom had suffered at the hands of guardsmen. Help for them now was not in short supply. Disguised as merchants, they made their journey and met the Bullrood soldiers who had been dispatched to see them on their way. The territory, the fruit they ate along the way, even the people they saw all seemed a rerun. The cairn appeared almost identical to those he had seen on similar missions in two related frames. About the only difference was the inscription which here dedicated the cairn to the memory of Bullrood's soldiers rather than Shroud's or Thrud's. Again, it seemed they had perished in a 200-year-old war, but not against Hud or Rud. Though he had forgotten to inquire, the kingdom he was now attempting to free was the kingdom of Fudd.
Recruitment house!
This time, it was not a Captain McKay with pointed ears or a Captain McFay with round, but a Commander Mac.
Marvin Loaf, you've got the copper?
Some. More back in Fudd. Safe, I hope.
Mac and two veterans went out and checked the packs. The stings had worn through their coverings in places, and the copper was drawing attention from those who dared not touch. A path cleared for the commander. He cut open a couple of bundles, scratched the copper with a knife, smiled, and felt the other bundles with his hands.
With what you have here, you can buy our finest and best fighting men. All equipment, horses, and catapults. Gosh, I didn't know there was that much copper. You've got your army.
Actually, there is a catch to our generosity.
They all looked at him inquiringly, particularly Marvin Loaf.
Let's go back in and discuss it.
They did. On the way in, John explained.
The catch is that when all of this is over, my boys and I leave this frame forever. We're here by mistake. Marvin's help makes us indebted to him, and we pay our debts. Besides, we had much the same situation back home until we did what Marvin's doing. Only our land is called Rud, and his tyrant was a woman.
Either sex, an army's an investment. A tyrant is a tyrant is a tyrant, until it's dead.
I like that.
They found a table, mugs of bleer, and soon had a large assemblage of onlookers. As in similar situations two times before in two different frames, Kelvin was pressed to talk. He did so now with pleasure. But long before he had recited their adventures, skepticism reared its monster head.
Do you really expect that we believe that? Dragons are impossible enough. But dragons with golden scales?
They swallow golden nuggets from the streams. Since dragons live until they are slain, and many have lived for centuries and possibly for thousands of years, the gold migrates to the scales.
I've heard of migrating metals in the bodies of shells and shellfish. That's science. But dragons aren't. Dragons are myth.
Different worlds, different rules. Go on, Kelvin.
He wanted to. But to his astonishment, he was losing his audience. None of these tough fighting men wanted to believe this junk. He was hardly into his tale of how they'd had a people's revolution in Rud, and the prophecy had made him important, particularly after the dragons.
And these posters you put up, they really did get you men?
Untrained ones, volunteers, farmers, and others who had had enough of oppression.
Go on.
He did, but it wasn't fun.
That's blood transfusion.
Kelvin had been giving a graphic description of what befell John and himself at the hands of the sorcerer.
If you say so. Now the dwarf Quito was catching her blood and—
Science!
Magic where I come from. Satanas was using sympathetic magic, the only magic he was skilled in. Rather than using a doll with my fingernail parings or hairs in it, he used my sister. Same blood. So as she weakened, I weakened.
That's bunk. I don't believe that one.
What about scarebirds?
Kelvin was talking about a large creature featured in the frame. It was as large as a dragon with the feathers of a raven.
We don't have those in my frame.
Bah! Scarebirds is natural. There isn't anything unnatural about them.
I could vouch for everything he says. You see, Zatanas was my grandpa, and Zoanna my mother.
Kelvin felt alarm at the look on his brother's face. In a moment, if he did not act, Kyan would. That would mean trouble. Big trouble. And he had had more than enough of that. Kyan might have better self-control than his father-in-law, but barely. His father came to their rescue.
It's something to laugh at here, but back then it wasn't. Remember, I originated in a world where it would all have sounded ridiculous. We didn't believe in magic there, but let me tell you what we did believe in. He believed in the scarebird.
Father, you never said you had scarebirds.
I didn't mean they were there when I left, but Earth had them before I was born, way, way back in my planet's history. They were around before any humans were. Every now and then, some of their bones were found, sometimes a complete skeleton. They weren't as big as the ones here, but they were similar. The scientists in my time called them pterodactyls. They existed, let's see, approximately 120 million of our years before my birth.
How did you know that, Father?
Well, Kelvin, it wasn't magic. My people mostly didn't believe in magic, you see, and certainly the scientists didn't. There were scientific ways of determining the ages of bones and other things. The pterodactyls, what you call the scarebirds, flew Earth's skies long, long before there were men, but their bones proved their existence.
No humans to see them at all, Father?
Not on Earth. In other frames, perhaps. Earth didn't have humans and pterodactyls living at the same time. In other existences, such as this one, yes. These are a lot larger than those we had. However, they've had more time to evolve.
The faces had all grown serious.
I don't know about what these fellows say, but there are mighty strange things in other frames. Tell them, Hester. Tell them what we saw.
Short fellows made all of squares, crystals that they saw things in, things at a great distance. Some big creature we don't even have legends about that ingests copper and produces the copper stings we brought. People that seem descended from Frugs with the ear patches of Frugs and a Frug's habits.
All that's true. We were all of us there. So, do you want our copper or don't you?
Those stings were produced by some monster? Grown on it?
You calling us liars?
I believe copper's copper. Maybe that's all we need to know. The rest, that's none of our concern. Copper, after all, is copper. I think we really need to proceed on that assumption.
Kelvin looked at his father and brother and felt his own mouth gaping. It was all over then. All his storytelling. It didn't seem to him to be right.
Yes, I quite agree. Why don't you visitors go out and see the flaw? Quite a sight. You've probably never heard of it.
They had, of course, heard of it, but didn't say so.
Come along.
So they trooped out together, one collection of male kin. Left behind were the locals, who had an important matter pertaining to the revolution to decide.
Why, Father? Why leave when there's so much that's so fascinating to tell?
We have to give them a chance to hash things out alone. As for their incredulity, well, people were that way on Earth too, Kelvin. Not all folk, but some. If they don't want to believe, they don't want to know something like magic. And I want to see that flaw, boys. You know I've heard about it, and I've been through it, but I've never actually seen it. Not when I've had my wits about me.
When they reached the wooden barrier, it looked just the same as it had in the other two frames, except that some of the graffiti were different. His father stood, open-mouthed, staring through the observation hole and into the velvety black, star-filled depths.
It's the womb of creation. God, it's a crack through Earth, Earth's worlds, an opening through all worlds, all possible worlds, all alternatives.
You had it on Earth, Father?
I don't know. I don't think we did. But maybe another part? Maybe in the Arctic? Or maybe another time?
The afternoon passed while John gradually built acceptance for something he hadn't quite believed in. Another day passed while a message was sent to the Fudd Palace. Another day drinking bleer, playing cards, and waiting for an unanticipated reply to the ultimatum. Still another day, while Kelvin worried. Then, finally, they set out. At the border, a delegation of uniformed guardsmen met them with the FUD flag and a surrender flag. Amazing. Evidently, the despot of this frame was relatively cowardly. They would have to make sure he didn't have some treachery in store.
Well, now that that little matter is settled...
Kelvin knew that this entire adventure had been just a little matter delaying a wedding in Kyan's view. Well, maybe so. Hito, the dwarf, met them first. They had been traveling their weary way from the transporter by foot, Kelvin now and then soaring overhead to see if he could spot someone. They bypassed Serpent's Valley, not wanting to get involved with the Flop-Ears and their reptile ancestors this trip.
Hito! What are you doing here?
Kelvin landed right in front of him.
You can fly!
Yes, I can fly, but only with this belt. It's nothing to get worried about. I'm Kelvin, the same Kelvin whose life you saved.
You saved us all from an evil king and his attempted alliance with Flop-Ears. Now, thanks to you, we live in a decent kingdom.
My father and brother and I have come back, but we won't all stay. Kyan wants badly to see his Lonnie.
Yes, Lonnie Burke. She is to marry Jack.
What?
Your brother has returned to her?
Yes.
She did not think he would, ever. She missed your brother, but she thought him gone. She faced the prospect of life as an old maid. Jack believed this too, and asked her to marry him.
Right. I understand.
Jack would not have asked if he had known Kyan would be back. Jack is an honorable man. You will attend the wedding? You and your brother and father?
Yes.
The grand ballroom is in the official Hud Palace. The ceremony is to take place at noon.
We'll be there. Where's your horse?
Being shod. I was going to get a silver ring.
Silver ring? Why?
For the wedding. For Jack to slip on his bride's finger.
Kelvin felt stunned. But then he remembered his father telling him of a similar custom on Earth.
May I come with you?
Of course. Can you fly with two?
You want to fly? Yes, my belt should support your weight too. But you will have to hold on tightly because...
Don't worry. I don't know how to fly, but I know what a fall can do.
Thus it was that Kelvin went with the dwarf to the jeweler. When they left the shop, Hito carefully put the ring in a small bag he hung over his shoulder.
Hito, would you like to fly yourself?
With you hanging on to me, Kelvin? I don't think that would work very well.
Well, by yourself then, if you don't go far or fast. Just to feel what it's like.
Not far or fast.
So Kelvin squatted and put the belt on Hito and instructed him in the handling of the lever. When he was certain Hito understood, he stood back and let the dwarf try it. Hito nudged the lever ever so gently. Suddenly he shot up high.
Slow!
I did it slow!
Then even slower! The reverse!
The dwarf's progress slowed, then he hovered, and finally he came slowly down.
I know what happened. I was too light for it.
That made sense. Kelvin caught him as he came within range so that there could be no further misjudgment. They both agreed that they had had enough experimentation. Kelvin donned the belt again. Then he held Hito, and they flew at a comfortable walking speed the short distance down the road to where John and Kyan Knight were still plotting.
Kelvin, what's that you've got?
Come see for yourself.
Kyan came forward.
Hito? Hito, my friend, what are you doing here?
I was on a mission.
Kelvin stood back, eyeing them and his father speculatively. Kyan was the happiest he had ever seen him. So how would he react to the news Hito brought?
Lonnie, she's all right?
She's in health.
But?
She thought you were never coming back. She thought you didn't want her.
I want her! Gods, I want her!
She's marrying Jack.
What?
The wedding's today, Kyan. At noon. We have time to get there. My gauntlets have been tingling. They know it's not too late.
Yes, yes! We must go. We must be there.
Kyan, Jack was good to us and saved all our lives more than once. Hers too. If they want each other, you won't interfere?
No, Father. No, of course not.
The bride and groom won't arrive until the wedding. You can take time to clean up from your travels, and Queen Zanon will get you better attire.
Zanon? She's still queen?
Yes, still queen. The people all love her.
People have great sense.
What of Roforth, her husband?
Roforth hasn't been found. He managed to get a knife into Sergeant Brotmar, his former lackey. We found the sergeant dying on the roof. The king somehow got away and hasn't been seen since.
He's still alive, then?
Until he's caught. Everyone wants him taken alive so he can be publicly executed.
The poor queen.
No, no. Not poor queen at all. She was a prisoner, a hostage to him. She suffered more than any of us. If she could have, she would have divorced him long ago.
Yes, I suppose that's true.
Later that day, they were almost to the palace gates, the same gates that had once gone down to permit a charge of flop-ears on war horses directed against the freedom fighters' troops. Kelvin was recalling that war in all its hideousness and the glory of their triumph as they approached. Suddenly, a horseman, wearing a worn uniform of the freedom fighters, clattered around the corner.
They've got him! They've got the king! Alive! They found him hiding out near Serpent Territory, just barely surviving. They're bringing him in now.
Kelvin and his party waited. Kyan and John, a bit more anxious to enter the palace than Kelvin was, were partway up the walk. Kelvin turned back to the street. Soon, horsemen came trundling a cart. Looking out of a cage on the cart, ragged, dirty, sunken-eyed, big-nosed, sunburned and peeled, was the figure of the king. What a relief to have captured him. But as the cart drew even with him, the face behind the bar spotted them, and the wretched creature called out,
Kelvin! John! Kyan! Oh, thank the gods!
Kelvin blinked. The supposed King Roforth had filthy round ears, but if this was not Roforth, if the ears were not the positive identification they seemed, then it had to be good King Roforth of his homeland. Unless the evil king was trying to fool him, Roforth was capable of anything to save his evil hide.
John! John! Remember those days in the royal dungeon? You and I, together! Remember!
The cart trundled past. The face looked back at them pitifully, and Kelvin wondered. Could it be? Was it possible that this was King Roforth?
Father, do you think...
But his father was looking eagerly toward the palace. Kelvin wasn't sure that he had even heard the prisoner. He wasn't quite certain he had heard correctly himself. Things moved so rapidly the rest of the morning that Kelvin hardly thought again about the man in the cage. All he could think about as they entered the great ballroom at noon was his brother and what his brother's reactions to the immediate events might be. All three of them, Kelvin, Kyan, and John, were there to witness, but not to make their presence known to others until the ceremony's end. All were dressed in stiff, heavily laced clothing that Kelvin, for his part, would be only too happy to shed. Later, they would get new traveling clothes, the Queen had promised. She was solicitous and helpful in forming their plans. Kelvin had to hope that his father was not going to stay here and marry her, though he knew this was a bad attitude on his part. The facing doors opened. Kelvin immediately focused all his attention on his brother's face. Kyan did not look angry or enraged. He looked sad, even heartbroken. It was pitiful to see anyone, especially a brother, in such condition. Lonnie and Jack came forward until they met, joined hands, and turned to face the Queen. Jack, dressed up and clean, was handsome despite his scar, and older than Kelvin had realized, really of John's generation. He looked somehow grim rather than happy, though that was probably because of the gravity of the occasion. Lonnie was beautiful, with her hair garlanded with flowers and her bridal outfit enhancing a body that had, at the worst of times, been quite attractive. She, too, was unsmiling, perhaps maintaining her composure by sheer willpower, for she was normally a cheerful girl.
Lonnie Burke, do you wish to marry Jack Smite, also known as Smoothie Jack, also known as Savior of Our Land?
I do.
And you, Jack Smite, also known as Smoothie Jack and Savior of Our Land, do you wish to marry Lonnie Burke?
I do.
Kelvin's pity for his brother intensified. It seemed that the girl he loved really did mean to marry his friend. But the ceremony was not finished. The Queen now addressed the guests.
Is there anyone here who objects?
Kelvin looked at his brother, hoping he would speak. He had been afraid Kyan would lose control, but now was sorry he hadn't. The Queen turned back to the couple.
Since there are no objections, I therefore declare you...
Wait!
You object, Kelvin Knight Hackleberry? Why?
My brother wants to wed her.
He's come back from his native frame for that purpose. We were delayed. We couldn't help it. But all the time he intended...
Kyan!
Lani sank to the floor unconscious. Kelvin had to move fast to keep up with his brother. Already the former princeling was at his true love's side. Kyan knelt by her, taking her hand.
Lani? Lani!
Kyan! Kyan, I thought you'd gone forever. That girl in your own world, I thought you would...
Hush, sweet Lani. She wasn't for me. You were. It just took me a while to get my mind straight. It will be all right. That is...
Jack's big hand came down and clasped Kyan's shoulder.
Friend! Companion closer than kin. Kyan, who made me what I am. If Lani chooses you, I will not object.
No. No, my friend. I lost my head. Right is right. You deserve her.
Why do you say that, old friend? We fought serpents together. We fought the king's minions and warriors. We dared greatly and we won. You deserve everything, including Lani. They should never have interfered. I felt I should marry her because it wasn't right to let her grieve any longer. But now you have returned. That changes everything.
But I left her for Lenore Barley.
Who is Lenore Barley?
The girl in the other frame who looks like you. But there is more of a difference between you than just pointed ears. She made love physically with different men, while you and I...
shared a more intimate joining.
Yes. Yes, that's true. But...
but it didn't mean anything to you.
No, no, that's not true. It meant everything.
Oh, did it, Kyan?
Yes. Yes, and that is why, Lani, you must marry Jack. He deserves you, while I do not.
What he means is...
That's not true! You deserve her while I do not. I have been with many women in a physical sense while you...
Enough! I'm not the least bit interested in marrying either of you, you philanderers.
Lani picked up the train of her wedding dress and disdainfully swept past everyone to her door and out the way she had come.
Well, go after her, Kyan. She's yours.
No, no, my friend. You go after her.
Pitiful, isn't it?
John Knight was looking at the queen, and it was uncertain exactly what he meant.
It certainly is. And after all my plans, all the flowers and festivities.
Yet, oddly, she did not seem completely displeased.
I tell you, father, it was him.
Nonsense. King Rufford here? With his pointed ears? He couldn't even use the transporter. It's impossible for Rufford to be here.
Maybe his ears were changed, Dad. Or maybe John is right, and the warning is just to keep pointed-eared persons in their place. Maybe he came some other way, not using the transporter. You did the first time, and Kyan did. Maybe it's dangerous and uncertain and painful, but the flaw makes it possible. They're going to execute him, so I think we should see. I swear it sounded like Rufford.
With all that noise the crowd was making, you thought you heard words you didn't. That's happened to me a number of times. Or maybe Rufford's using magic.
Maybe somebody's using magic. Bad magic. Dad, we owe it to Rudd's king. We haven't been back there since this business started. Something might have happened. If Rufford somehow got sent here...
I suppose I can stand one more trip to a dungeon. I hate them, though.
Just to make certain, Dad. That's all. It would be a terrible thing if that really was King Rufford, and we let him be killed in Roforth's place.
Terrible, but unlikely. All right. We'll go get permission from the queen.
In her throne room, Zanan looked every bit the queen. Her very beauty and regality made John a bit tongue-tied. But in due course, trying unsuccessfully to ignore the fact that he had once made love to a body almost exactly like hers, he got out the story.
And you say this Rufford of your homeland is a good man?
As good as Roforth is bad.
Then we certainly must leave no doubt in any of our minds. My husband deserves execution, while his lookalike deserves only the best.
They followed the queen to the dungeons. They reached the landing, and the guards who had preceded them and the guards who were already there parted and permitted them to approach the one cell that was occupied. In that cell, sprawled on a pile of straw which had not been changed since their own imprisonment, a short, squat man with a big nose lay with closed eyes.
Rufford!
The prisoner sat up. Then he scrambled to his feet and rushed to the bars.
John! Kelvin! Kelvin the Round Ear! I knew you would come! When I called to you, I knew you would come and rescue me!
John stared at the ears. They were round. This could not be the man he had spent years with in Rudd's dungeon. It could not be. And yet he felt that it was. The prisoner focused sunken eyes on Zanan.
Zoanna!
I am Zanan.
I am said to look much like Zoanna, but I do not share her personality. But you look much like my husband, Roforth.
I am Rufet. Roforth is in my world.
Your ears, round.
The prisoner touched those appendages with dirty fingers and scrubbed at caked brown material at their tips. Scars were revealed, healing, but visible.
He cut off my tips. The one who looks like me did it, and Zoanna watched. Then they took me in the boat, and they threw me in the water, and I went into the floor. I came up sputtering by the waterfall, exactly as you did, John. Then I climbed out, and I recognized things from your description, and I wandered all around. I found appleberries and other fruits, and then I reached these valleys, just as you did. I didn't know whether to climb down and meet your flop ears or keep going. But then, three men came and roped me and tied me up. They called me Roforth, and I knew then what had happened. I knew that I was in trouble, and all I could hope for was that you would come back here and get me out, just as Kelvin got us out before.
That clinches it. Your Majesty, let King Roforth out. He's not the vile man you were married to.
John walked the halls that night, unable to sleep. The statuary and furniture loomed up in the darkened palace, just as it had when he had paced the hallways at night in Rudd's palace.
So this is Hud. And Hud is all. Everything I need to think about. Kine will probably stay here after he and his girl make up their differences. Will I? Zoanna was everything I wanted, I thought, when besotted by her sex appeal. Zanon has her beauty and not her nature. She has everything good that Zoanna didn't. But Zoanna had something, too. The evil creature had an art. She used enchantment on me, or at least doped my wine. I believed her to be my ideal, but I was wrong. Others had been just as wrong. But now here is Zanon, the good, perfect woman that I longed for. So why this hesitancy? Why is it that I'm still thinking of Charlaine?
The irony was that Zanon, freed from her evil husband, was now available, while Charlaine was not. He would do better staying here and away from there. Only mischief would come of his return to that other frame. His feet had unconsciously taken him to a door. He paused, uncertain. He knew whose door this was, but no longer wished to knock on it.
Oh, darling, I know you've given your word and you don't want to hurt her, but...
It is true. I did that. I owed her, and once I thought I loved her, but that changed after I met you. But now that Kyan's back, if she wants him...
Oh, yes, I know she does. I could see it in her eyes. I thought she loved you, but when she saw him, I knew. But the idiot kept denying her, and it is true that Hades has no fury like that of...
We can marry, too. You and I, Mr. and Mrs...
King and Queen... I see no reason why I should abdicate, and you'll make a good king, a fair and just king. Do you think you can bear being called Your Majesty?
Oh, I think I can stand it, if that's the price for you.
I rather think it is, Jack. We'll be so happy, you and I. Not like the usual royal marriage.
Yes, happy. The former royalty-hating bandit.
Revolutionary.
If you prefer, the former revolutionary and the queen.
Oh, darling.
I thought I came to the palace to conquer, but I was conquered.
You were everything the king wasn't. It seemed so promising, and then Kyan didn't come back, and Lonnie was near suicide, so you had to...
And you know, I lied about having known many women.
Liar. Hold me. Hold me tight.
Oh, Zanon. Zanon.
Oh, Jack. Jack!
John tiptoed away from the door. They were going to be happy, and so was the land. When he woke in the morning, John thought he had dreamed the episode of the preceding night. Kelvin was getting dressed in his conventional clothes, new brownberry shirt, green briar pantaloons, cushiony cut-ilk stockings, and heavy walking boots.
Where's Kyan?
I don't know, Dad. He woke me up and started talking about Lonnie and how he couldn't live without her. About how he was going to go to her and somehow make her understand. I must have drifted off again because I just now awakened and he's gone.
What time is that, early or late?
Much too early or much too late. Do you think he'll marry her? We really need to get home.
At least I do.
He will, and I do too. There's something strange about King Rufert being here. If Zoanna is alive and Roforth is impersonating Rufert...
Kelvinia may be in more trouble than Rudd ever was with Eretex.
I'm afraid you're right, son. What in the world can this woman be up to? It seems obvious she's alive. I was so sure she was dead, but maybe that was wishful thinking.
Can we even be sure of that? I mean, with so much magic and science around...
We can be very certain she's not dead. If zombies exist, I don't think they snatch lookalikes from other frames. At least I hope they don't.
Father, do you really think she's planning a war? Maybe has already started one?
If Roforth has taken Rufert's place, the two of them will be ruling the country, possibly with bloodshed. And that is an ugly possibility.
She could be up to anything. Maybe she's trying for revenge.
Could be. Son, don't say anything to Kyan about this. I really think he'll want to stay here now. And really, considering Zoanna is his mother, here is the best place for him.
You don't think he'll fight for Zoanna again?
No, he wouldn't do that. But if he's here with his bride, he won't have the temptation. If Zoanna's alive, I think you know what we have to do. We don't want him there for that.
No, not for that.
I think we'll attend his wedding this day. Maybe he will come to appreciate Zenon as the mother he should have had. If he doesn't wed Lonnie today, you and I and King Rufert had better go home anyway. I don't think we dare wait longer.
All right, Father. But will he?
He'd better.
Later in the day, they did indeed attend the wedding. With them, cleaned up and fancily dressed as the others, was King Rufert. In fact, they were the ones conducting the ceremony of the double wedding of Kyan to Lonnie and Jack to Zenon.
Kyan Knight from our frame, do you wish to marry Lonnie Burke of this frame?
You know I do.
And you, Lonnie Burke, do you wish to marry Kyan Knight?
I do. Oh, I do.
You, Jack Smite, etc., do you?
I do.
And you, Queen Zenon, lovely and good widow, or divorcee, of absent, abdicated, discredited, reprehensible former King Roforth of Hud, do you wish to marry Jack?
I do indeed want to marry Jack.
Now, John Knight took the floor.
Does anyone here have objection to either joining?
Kyan and Jack produced silver rings and slipped them on the fingers of the brides. It was Kelvin's turn.
Then you are married. For as long as you wish it, or until time bites its end. Goodbye, Kyan. Good luck. Long life.
Kelvin shook his brother's hand, feeling that it might be for the last time.
Goodbye? What are you talking about?
There may be trouble at home. We have to find out.
But
if I'm here, maybe he's there.
Roforth? You mean I'm coming too?
No, you're not. You're going to stay here with this delightful, beautiful girl and have a proper honeymoon. If there is trouble and we need help, one of us will be back.
But really, you can't leave like this.
We have to. You see to your wife, I'll see to mine.
I think that's a great idea, husband.
I have my gauntlets, the Muvar weapon, the levitation belt, and the Chimera's sting. I doubt there's any trouble I can't handle with those. Probably Roforth is in the palace, and...
Roforth? My husband?
I'm your husband now, dear. You divorced him if he didn't die first.
Yes, of course, but...
We don't know that he's there, but there's a chance that he might be.
You'll bring him back? For punishment?
If we can. If we don't have to destroy him ourselves.
We'll be back in any case. Not to stay, you understand, but just to visit and let you know what happened.
When?
As soon as our problem is cleared.
I still think I should come.
No.
Kyan looked relieved in spite of himself. Jack had been fidgeting throughout the exchange.
If need be, we will both go to their rescue, Kyan.
And if need be, you can have all of Hud's armed forces and all the fighting men our treasury will buy.
It seemed a satisfactory solution. Once again, and then several more times, everyone said goodbye. Then, it was time to travel fast and without mistake in the transporter. Kelvin sat in the middle of the boat, rowing with the help of the gauntlets, while King Rufert filled the stern seat and John Knight sat at the bow. They passed the roaring falls into star-filled spaces, the Flaw. The gauntlets rode through the turbulent waters without difficulty. Then, around the bend, past eerily glowing walls, their boat and themselves lit by the lichen's radiance. A swirl in the water that Kelvin had noticed on previous trips, a sort of dimple, actually, and then, finally, the boat landing.
I think we better be cautious. There could be enemies waiting for us here.
I'm very cautious. Rufert, perhaps you'd better stay hidden down here.
until after we see how things are above.
I'm still ruler.
Yes, that's why we don't want you to fall into the hands of Roforth again.
Roforth and Zoanna. Damn Zoanna, my former queen.
We're all subject to sorcery, even those of us who never wanted to believe it possible.
I'll go check.
Kelvin rose above the boat landing. In his right hand was the Muvar weapon. Strapped on his left side was his sword, while strapped between his shoulder blades was the lightweight sting the Chimera had given him. He nudged the lever forward with his finger, keeping the Muvar weapon in his hand. He rose above the first flight, and then the second flight of dusty ancient stairs. Finally, he was at the hole that let in daylight to mingle with the soft radiance of the lichens. He accelerated and shot outside fast in case someone was waiting there. He paused in midair. Two men in guardsmen uniforms sat at a block of masonry playing cards. One of them looked up with open mouth while the other played a card.
Kelvin! You can really fly that thing!
Practice. Are you waiting for me?
King's orders. You are to go directly to the palace now that you're back. Your brother get married all right?
Yes, after some delays. Nice wedding. Everyone was there.
Your father return with you?
He's not with me.
We have a horse for you. Do you want to ride?
I thought I'd fly and surprise someone.
Kelvin reholstered the Muvar weapon, placed his hand over his central buckle, and accelerated out of their sight.
What do I do now? Do I just go to the palace? I should have asked questions. Why didn't I think of that?
Down below was a troop of horsemen and men on foot wearing Kelvinia's grass-green uniforms. Cautiously, he descended until his feet touched the ground.
Kelvin! Thank the gods!
General Brautner, I just got back from my brother's wedding.
I know! Now we're saved!
Has there been fighting?
Has there been? Kelvin, we're at war! We've been losing, thanks to that witch. But now that you're back, that will change. Now that you're here with that weapon. See these burns? Witch's fire did that. She's using witch's fire! What chance is an ordinary man against that?
Kelvin looked at the scorched faces and arms. None had been fatal or even very bad, but maybe others were. The general was right. There was no way the ordinary soldier could fight against witch's fire.
You'll burn her, won't you? The way you did with that witch in Eretex? Send her damned fire back to her! Burn her up!
I'll burn her.
She's back behind the Klingland and Kant's borders, way back to the Twin Capitals. She's got plenty of men fighting for her, Klinglanders and Kantians. If you don't stop her, she'll take over Kelvinia.
I'll stop her.
There's some of our own still fighting near the caps. At least, there were. Take care. Witches can be dangerous.
I know!
Roads and hills and forests and rivers later, he neared the caps. Down below, he spied a dust cloud of battle, and in the sky was a ball of fire.
It's time to act. It's time to crisp a witch as I crisp Melba.
He landed on a knoll, drew the Muvar weapon from its hip holster, and prepared to intercept and turn back the witch's fire. Philip peeked cautiously out from behind a tree at the edge of the glen. He had stumbled about for days since running from his outfit. It hadn't been that he was scared, exactly, but Lester had been trying to make him go home, and then those fireballs had started, and all pandemonium had broken loose. There were two witches in that glen. He could not see them clearly there in the mist, but he knew there were two. He had been watching them while his belly growled from hunger and his arms and face smarted from their contacts with nettishes and poison ovi plants. He would get her, he promised himself. He would get her. Old Witch Helba was standing to one side of the tree, partially turned. The other witch and the cat were at the crystal. If he was very, very careful how he aimed, he'd skewer old Helba through the heart. After that, he'd have to quickly kill the other witch and the cat. He didn't like it, but he knew it was necessary. He cocked the crossbow carefully, bolt in place, three others close at hand. Melba had trained him in the art of crossbowing as well as in wood stealth and survival in the woods. Melba had taught him well. Lester and St. Helens did not know how very much he had learned. He rested the crossbow across a log, placed his cheek firmly against the stalk, and took infinitely careful aim. There would be but the one chance. This time, he would get her right through the heart.
No!
It was the baby demanding that it be fed, what was proper food for its growth and development and eventual birth.
Helen, what's the matter?
water!
No!
Held, you're scaring me. Why do you look like that?
They were only food sources, after all. Hunger of a superior life form superseded everything else.
Helm?
She had to get her teeth into that luscious throat.
Helm, stop it!
The food source pushed at her head, holding her back, challenging her to use her full strength.
Dr. Stagg! Dr. Stagg, help!
Kildum nudged Kildee in the ribs.
Come on, what? She's gone. Let's do what we said we'd do.
Kildum ran right up to the dungeon guard just as they had planned.
Trum! Trum, they're coming, Trum! We just saw them run into the trees!
What are you two up to?
It's true, Trum! We saw three of them in the woods, soldiers, wearing the Hermandy uniforms. I don't know how they got there, but...
Damn! If you're lying to me, I'll hold you while Hilba soaps your mouths!
No, Trum, really! Enemy soldiers! Maybe slipping up to kill Hilba, maybe to kill us, Trum! Trum, you've got to do something!
I can't leave my post! Even if I believed you, I couldn't.
Trum, you go with my brother and I'll guard. Please, Trum, please.
All right. But if anything happens here, you raise a shout.
Oh, I will, Trum. I will. Come.
Trum hesitated a moment more, then followed him at a brisk walk that became a trot. They rounded the corner of the palace and were out of sight. Kildee took the key he had surreptitiously taken from the guard's key ring and ran with it as fast as he could. Down the dungeon stairs to the dark, recently scrubbed cell.
General Riley! General Crum! Come quick! My brother and I have begun your escape!
Kelvin's finger was already tightening on the trigger of the Muvar weapon when he noticed that his gauntlets were hot. Well, that was natural, wasn't it? The gauntlets warned of danger, and certainly that ball of fire was danger. So why did he hesitate?
No, no, Kelvin! Do not destroy the witch! Do not destroy her! You think I don't want those berries? Leave it to you and you'll never get back with them. First you fool around fighting, then you'll go see your wife and forget about what's important.
But the fireball!
Believe me, I know better than you.
But...
The fireball that was now ahead of the advancing army dipped groundward. Now was the time to act.
No! No, you fool, inferior life form! Don't you feel your gloves heating? You'll kill your mother!
He didn't know what the chimera meant, but he knew a warning. Indeed, the gauntlets were burning. He had been concentrating so hard that he hadn't noticed, or had taken it to be from the radiation of the fireball. Quickly, he moved the knob on his weapon so that it would simply counter the magic rather than rebound it on the sender. He started to squeeze the trigger, pointing the weapon skyward. The fireball exploded spectacularly, sending down to the ground just ahead of the troops a golden waterfall of scintillating stars. He saw Kelvinian troops scattering, responding to the terror he'd felt. Behind them, the fireball grew bright, sputtering like a dying fire. The fire hurt his eyes, creating afterimages that disoriented him and made him feel as if he were again in astral form. Then, the images faded as the waterfall faded. And there was nothing but littered landscape and fleeing men.
It could have killed, but it didn't.
Now you know.
You said my mother.
Would I lie to you when your mission for me is incomplete? Now you are soon to learn about your mother.